Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the April 4th edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, this week, the United States Department of Agriculture released the Grain Stocks and Prospective Plantings Report. It showed a really big soybean acreage figure. And despite this, soybeans managed to gain 18 cents in the new crop and 37 and a quarter in the old crop. We'll talk about that and so much more today on Commodity Week. Our panelists today include Aaron Curtis, Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises from Mandeville, Louisiana. Our special guest today, Ken Morrison of Morrison on the Markets out of St. Louis, Missouri. Let's begin our discussion with this question. Dan Zwicker, when you looked at the prospective plantings report and you saw the big number that came out for the acreage figure for soybeans, did you believe that we could end the week posting an outside up for November soybeans?
Yes, for the simple reason, for the most part, the trade, I think, while the average trade, yes, was maybe just a shade higher than what USDA came out with. There was a lot of underpinning thinking that it was going to be 82, 83. And then with the strong demand that we have in the current crop year, that I suspect at some point in time is going to be rolled forward into new crop. We need a big soybean crop if they want to keep prices where they were wanting to take them. I mean, there's a lot of talk of bringing them back to $10, $9 or whatever if we had a big soybean crop. And USDA's number came out and really threw the bear a pretty good curveball, and he had nothing to do but he had to cover.
Aaron Curtis, when you took a look at those numbers and you consider what the basis levels look like across Illinois, the nation down at the Gulf, did you find a way to support November soybeans this week?
Well, I think when you look at the trend we've had at least the last two or three years, Todd, on bean basis, at least along the Illinois River and down to the Gulf, values continue to be well supported given the fact that China continues to be a front-loaded buyer of U.S. soybeans. And, you know, we've got some Gulf values out there right now for this fall that are pretty well supported, and some decent values along the river already for this time of year. So I think, like Dan mentioned, that demand function for the first half of the year, at least on the export side, is looks like to keep basis pretty well supported. I also agree with him that, you know, the market was largely expecting large bean acres, and that's what the USDA told us.
Aaron, I'm going to need you to speak up the next time we talk to you. We can hear you, but just
a
little
more.
There you go. That's better. Thank you so much. And then when we take a look, Chuck Shelby, at this marketplace from a farmer's perspective, and you think about the number of acres that you might put in the ground and the ratio of corn to soybeans, did you take pause earlier in the week and reconsider what you might do?
Well, I think the interesting thing is the corn rallied. And we have had a decent corn rally, but the new crop November beans have kept pace. And I don't think with the kind of weather pattern we're in, Todd, we're really have changed many farmers' opinions as far as maybe moving over to corn. One thing to comment on those 81.5 million acres, when you bring in more acres from certain areas that are maybe not as productive, looking at what is our national average bean yield going to be next year, I think some of the numbers USDA's projected and others may with 44, 45, maybe 46 yield, I think, in our opinion, that may be a little bit too high when you look at our average yield on 81.5 million bean acres.
Or you have an opinion that producers should be protecting the difference between November price now and the crop insurance setting price month of February?
Well, we're value-based, and we think when you look at the profit that's offered, and when you take that into account, the kind of rally we've had and what the outlook was just a couple months ago, we continue to try to take advantage of that. Be flexible, though. We're not one to lock ourselves into just simply cash sales without some call options, or the other alternative pathway is to use some kind of put option strategy that, you know, guarantees you can make some money, which didn't look very likely just a couple months ago.
Dan, next week, the United States Department of Agriculture will release the April WASDEAR, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. It'll update the ending stocks for corn and soybeans. I'm concerned here about soybeans. They're now at 145 million, and that ratio is down tight enough that it would be very hard for them to lower it very much, although we're running at a pace for exports that is greater than that amount that we have left, really, to push out the door. What do you think will happen?
Well, that's going to be the thing that everybody's watching. That's going to be the most interesting, how USDA juggles the numbers. I'm sure what they'll do is probably increase imports. They're going to bring ending stocks probably down to 115, 120, which is kind of bare minimum pipeline. So they're going to, you know, take some bushels out of there. They're probably going to import. And then they may not recognize fully the 100 million bushels more that we've sold than what they do, what they will put on the balance sheet, because they'll say eventually those sales will be canceled at some point in time. But I do think what USDA's function here is, I think, is to actually tell the markets that things are very, very tight based upon what we can figure out on what kind of supplies we have on hand, what we see on the export sales, and the demand for soybean meal is that soybeans need to go up and reach a price level that will encourage those sales cancellations and or bring a whole bunch of beans into the United States. So we are in a rationing mode on soybeans, and we'll have to see how USDA handles that.
And we'll get back to you just in a bit on what you think the topside potential for soybeans are. But Aaron Curtis, Dan mentioned a couple of things that could happen with soybeans that could cancel some of the exports. I suppose they could roll them forward into next year, or the price of beans could just go up high enough that it begins to limit usage in other ways. What do you think will happen?
Yeah, I think that's our part of the function, at least on the nearby side, is what the traders are trying to accomplish here, some sort of demand rationing idea here to where we kind of slow demand a little bit. But, yeah, I agree with Dan. I think we'll see imports adjusted higher. I don't think we'll see a big decrease in ending stocks on the Wednesday report, you know, somewhere in that 135, 140 area, maybe raise exports slightly, but also increase imports, so the net result's not going to be a big change. But I think that's partly why we're continuing to see nearby soybeans pretty well supported here, trying to accomplish that function of trying to slow this demand a little bit, Todd.
Chuck, do you have upside potential for newer old crop soybeans?
Well, I think if we can clear the $15 level, that we have opportunities to go to $16. If we really do need a ration on the new crop beans. You look at some of the old highs we made when that contract last June and July, you got near $13. So if we're in a rationing mode and old crop leaves us up, we'll pull the new crop along.
Hey, Chuck, I have one other thing, and I want to switch into corn here pretty shortly, but I'm going to bring Mr. Morrison in before we get to that, because I have two technicians and we have a lot of numbers that are technically driven here. But can you talk to me just a bit about the cattle market and maybe the hogs as well, because June cattle were down, what, $3.55 for the week. The May were down 97.5 cents in the feeders, which wasn't much, but it was an outside down week. What do you think?
Yeah, we've had a great run in the livestock sector, and hog market has finally realized or trying to rationalize, you know, just exactly how many hogs we're going to lose in those summer months. The cattle market is pretty supported. The cash market's still above 140 area. I think the deferreds June on out have a discount price, but our concern or our question would be, when we get into the summer months and we really truly are short on the meat supply from the hog sector, we might anticipate those summer cattle months actually rising to meet kind of the current price. So technically, you know, we've had a pretty big failure in both those markets, but the fundamental event is pretty powerful. A correction on the chart side of the equation is not out of the question.
Let's bring Ken Morrison now into our conversation. He's with Morrison on the Markets out of St. Louis, Missouri. He began his professional career trading commodities at Cargill. He held a whole bunch of positions there in the United States and Asia over a 27-year span. And then he launched Morrison on the Markets. Before he managed to do that, he was at Doane Advisory Service, where he launched a web-based daily subscriber service there. He does a lot of technicians. He's a technician, I should say. Does a lot of analysis and looks for ways to improve trading results and manage risk in a whole bunch of commodities. Thank you so much, Ken, for taking the time with us this afternoon. When you looked at the total of the marketplace for this week, which of the technical indicators jumped out at you as the one that means the most?
Well, I think, to me, I would kind of sum up this week, perhaps we're going to look back, Todd, and say that this was the week that margins for feeding and margins for processing corn into ethanol probably peaked. So from my standpoint, I think both the fundamentals in the cattle market as well as the technicals in the cattle market today, and of course the technicals in the hog market. Both of those markets broke down this week. We've had a huge correction also in ethanol. We've had a huge correction in the gasoline versus ethanol spreads. So that's kind of the way I sum up the week is, I look at the, combination of the fundamentals and the technicals in those three markets, hogs, cattle, and ethanol, which obviously impacts the intrinsic value of corn, and say that those were probably, in my opinion, the most three important events of the week.
Aaron Curtis, you have a question for Ken?
Yeah, Ken, just curious what your read was on the stocks and acres report on Monday, and if you saw any surprise or anything that particularly had any interest for you.
Absolutely. No surprises in the corn per se. Well, let me preface that by saying we have to recognize that one standard deviation on a corn stocks number of this size is about 200 million bushel one way or the other. So, you know, it came in about 100 million bushel under the trade. So I don't consider that a surprise. And quite frankly, somebody described corn reports on Monday as a double barrel bullish report, but you look at the chart and I don't think the chart necessarily agreed with that, and if you look at corn spreads, they certainly didn't agree with that, because May corn continued to lose ground relative to the back months all week long. And it, to me, historically, I rarely remember a bull market that is led by the back end. So I found that interesting, that spreads both in beans and corn kind of went contrary to what we think the sentiment of the market is.
Chuck Shelby, a question from you.
When you look at the ethanol industry and the profitability has dropped, but still very profitable as we go forward, how do you see the ethanol industry faring in the summer months?
Oh, I think the ethanol, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've taken some air out of the margins this week, but they're still going to run just as full capacity as the transportation and logistics will allow them to do so. So I think in terms of corn for ethanol demand, I think the USDA's number is solid, and I don't look for much change in that.
And Dan?
Yeah, Ken, what is it that you don't like about the corn chart?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't like the fact that spreads are widening. We had about an 8 cent loss in the May December corn spread this week, so I don't like that part of it. To me, it's a chart, and I'm looking at the front end. It's a chart that is yet to validate this little up leg that we had early in the week, if you will. So it still has potential, but I think it's got to prove itself by closing through and solidly through and staying through for two or three days above Monday's high.
Dan, I suspect that you and Ken might have different views of the marketplace. I'm gonna work with the two of you for just a second, so bear with me. So, Ken, what do you think on old crop corn? Where do you put a high in the marketplace, or what's your point at which you're aiming, if you've got one at this time, or are you bearish that marketplace?
I don't see too much upside there, Todd. I suppose we could get a bit of a, given the right set of circumstances, I suppose we could get a bounce to maybe 520, 530 in the front month. But I wouldn't be surprised at all to see 480 or 470 either. So, I'm kind of waiting for the market to validate what seemingly is, some will say, and if you look at the fund position, which is pushing about 300,000 futures long, the largest net long position they've had since December, there's certainly a bullish bias there. I think we need to really see if they're willing to put more money down.
And Dan, your targets for corn?
Well, I think we're just getting warmed up.
I kind of thought that might be the case.
So I guess we disagree a little bit. For the quarter, corn futures traced out a quarterly reversal. We went underneath the December low there just prior to the crop report, and we finished out the month sharply higher. And it was a quarterly reversal to the upside. So I think, and then when you look at today, this week's action, I think we've just met the minimum upside retracement level on corn. I mean, when you take a look at the lead futures corn, you can kind of take on the weekly chart, if you draw Fibonacci retracement levels, from the all-time high there at 843 and three quarters, down to this 406 low, we've just come back 23% of that decline. So I think that's just basically, kind of a warm up. It's a nice rounded saucer bottom. And, I think we're, headed at least, to a 38% retracement, which is up into that 535. And I would not rule out 625 as a 50% retracement down the road.
Okay, Ken. So I'm going to bring you back into the conversation. You can refute whatever you want there. But my guess is that you use fundamentals a lot in the process, too. Maybe you can talk more about your position in this marketplace and what you think those fundamentals look like.
Well, I think somebody touched upon it earlier in the conversation about demand rationing for soybeans. And I guess one of the things that we don't hear very much about, but it's certainly demand rationing, is occurring actually with the biggest consumer of corn and soybeans in the world, and that's China. We've had a situation this week recently where pork prices, for the first time ever, and at least in USDA's database, pork prices in China are now lower than pork prices in the U.S. Now, if you consider for a moment what that might imply for margins, because China also happens to be the market where the highest priced corn is in the highest priced soybean meal. So think about what that implies for margins, and they are bad, both in soybean crushing as well as pork raising. So I think we're seeing some demand rationing already.
Okay, we thank you both for your time. We'll get to both of you again. We'll talk more about soybeans in just a bit. We, of course, are talking to Ken Morrison. He's at Morrison on the Markets out of St. Louis, Missouri. Aaron Curtis of Midco from Bloomington, Illinois, is on the phone line with us, along with Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. And Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. You can hear our program anytime you'd like on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media and the weather forecast for the weekend. Rainfall again. Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute state climatologist, joins us with an update.
April is starting out cool and wet. Temperatures are about 1 to 2 degrees below average. Precipitation was heaviest this week in southern Illinois, with many areas south of Interstate 70 getting 3 to 8 inches of rain. The rains tapered off northward with amounts of 1 to 2 inches common north of Interstate 70. Soil temperatures under grass around the state are finally warming. The 4-inch temperatures are in the low to mid-50s from Springfield southward, but still in the 40s and 30s in northern Illinois. Soil moisture looks good around the state at depths down to 20 inches. There's some lingering dryness at lower depths in the northwest, and of course saturated fields in parts of southern Illinois where the rains were heaviest. The National Weather Service forecast for the coming week shows mild temperatures and less rainfall. Lows Sunday morning will be ranged from 32 degrees in the north to the upper 30s in southern Illinois. Highs on Sunday will be in the upper 50s and low 60s across Illinois. And by Monday, it'll be a little cooler with highs in the mid-50s and in the mid to upper 50s on Tuesday and Wednesday, and finally in the upper 60s on Thursday. Morning lows on Monday through Thursday will be in the low to mid-30s in the north and in the low 40s in the south.
Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, with our Friday look at the agricultural weather forecast. Hear how the numbers settled up in Chicago from the CME Group on the weekly trade. This is Friday to Friday changes, not the daily, but the weekly. Nearby May corn, a 501 and three-quarter settlement price, was up 9 3/4 from the previous week. It posted an outside up week with a high of $5.12.5 and a low at $4.75. December also posting an outside up week, settled at 506 3/4, 19.5 cents higher than the previous Friday. Soy complex bean futures, 14.96 for the top of the May contract, the low on the week at $14.23. Finished 14.73 3/4, up 37.25 cents from last Friday. In November beans, $12.08 the final, up 18 cents from last week. That was an outside up week as well. Bean meal at $4.79.10, up $10.70 for the week. Bean oil at $41.57. posted a hookup at $1.09 higher. May wheat futures at 669 3/4 were down 25 3/4 cents. And the July at 1455 in the harvest month, up 47 1/4 cents. June live cattle at 134.80, finished the week $3.55 lower than last Friday. May futures posted an outside down at 178.52.5 in the feeder cattle, 97.5 cents lower. And June lean hogs at $120.55 for the week, finished on their low, off $9.02.5. By the way, the April contract posted a hook down as well in the lean hog futures. That's a look at the numbers. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This, of course, is the April 4 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Ken, why don't you take up the technicals on the soybean market and tell me how you see that one laying out?
Well, I think May and front month soybeans are basically, we've got a bullish flag that's probably just kind of hanging around till next week's USDA report to see if they're going to provide another bullish input. I think we flirted a little bit with the $15 front month May contract level, got, I think, within about 3 cents before selling set in, and probably some lightening up long liquidation prior to next week's report. How high is high, I guess, is always the case. From my point of view, I suppose most of my subscribers are pretty well sold out in old crop beans anyway, as well as they should have been. There's been no incentive to really carry them. And $15 plus in front month beans, sure, why not? It can happen. I'm not sure how much it means. I'm not sure how much it really would change the sentiment, if you will, or even the acreage for new crop, but absolutely, we could get $15 plus front month beans.
Aaron Curtis, another question from you.
Yeah, Ken, how are you reading new crop prices, at least from a producer standpoint? Kind of what's your advice been as we move forward, especially as we've seen a little bit of a rally here?
I think the market is a little bit surprised that the market is providing them a rally in corn, for one. I have a sense that not enough people are taking advantage of this rally in new crop beans to lock in some profits. I kind of view farmers' attitudes, producers' attitudes toward new crop soybeans similar to their attitudes toward selling and locking in, you know, $6 and you know, $5.50 December corn, you know, 12 months ago, is that they got so used to, you know, $7 corn that it was hard to pull the trigger at $5.50 or $6. And I kind of believe that the same thing may be occurring in soybeans now. So that may be a long answer to your question, but I don't sense producers have done a lot of additional hedging this past week or so. I don't tell other people what risk they should take or what positions they should take. I simply take positions myself and explain why I'm doing it. And I'm currently short November beans, and I'm also bear spread corn, and really considering on the next pop from these levels in November beans, probably adding to that short.
Chuck Shelby, another question?
What do you find a point to stop yourself out of your short November contracts?
I'm not at that pain point right now. Let me put it that way.
And Dan Zwicker, a question from you.
I guess my question is if you talk to the farmer that listens to farmer advisors, such as what we have on WLL and, you know, the individual subscriber newsletters and DTN and all that, everybody's been in the same frying pan. I mean, if one advisor has told the farmer that he needs downside price risk, they all have. And it's interesting to see that as these farmer advisory services have all emphasized that, this market move into new highs. I mean, it came out of the January low and really hasn't looked back. And I see the same thing continuing, that farmer advisory services are still telling farmers to check their inventory.
All right, well, not really.
What's happening? Why is the market going up when everybody's telling the farmer to protect his inventory?
You have 15 seconds to ask why. Answer the
question. One reason the market has gone up a lot is that the funds were short covering, and most of this rally has been short covering led, and that's especially so in corn.
Thanks so much to Ken Morrison of Morrison on the Markets, Aaron Curtis from Midco, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, and Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week for the fourth day of April. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.